Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Not just any Tuesday. It's National Signing Day, Eve Tuesday. Crazy day. Lots going on. The calm before the storm, which is National Letter of Intent Day, Signing Day. First Wednesday of every February. It comes on February 1st this year, and we want to talk about everything going on with this USC recruiting class. We are doing another, because it was so popular last week, premium Peristyle podcast, Trojan Blast podcast, talking with Gerard Martinez, national recruiting analyst for USCFootball.com, does an amazing job covering the USC Trojans on the recruiting front. And last week we did a 90-minute show and was just getting, we never had that many comments about a podcast on our USCFootball.com message boards. Everyone loved it, so we wanted to do it again. We'll do them in the future too, but one more before signing day. Gerard, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing good. Not a lot of sleep past few days, but I'm coming to expect that after about 13 years of doing this. But doing good, just grinding away. Got the telephone on buzz because it goes off every 5 seconds. And getting a lot of couriers. I have couriers coming to my house now. Now I get most of my recruiting information from couriers now. I've learned over the years, keep it on the low key, have couriers come to the house.
The carrier pigeons, is those things? Is that, do you do that at all? Or
no, couriers, actually, Osama bin Laden, trapped in his little estate and can't leave the house, and you just have couriers come in so the NSA can't figure out, who's calling you on cell phone. So it's called tradecraft, Ryan. It's called tradecraft.
All right. I thought maybe you could do some faxes, since that's still being used.
Faxes? Faxes are outdated. Couriers are more up to date than faxes, I think, these days.
But we still use them on National Signing Day. You still get the faxes in. I don't see why.
Yeah, and you know what? That's funny. Somebody mentioned, like, is there going to be, an update on that pretty soon at some point where you could scan them in or email them or do something differently? And I'm sure that's probably going to be in the works in the next few years because, yeah, fax machines are diminishing. We're not seeing many fax machines anymore. Then when you got to, buy a printer, you have to make sure it has an all-in-one fax. I got my mom a printer for Christmas, and I had to make sure it had an all-in-one fax because occasionally you still fax. But yeah, it's faxing is not necessarily today's technology. Not a lot of people, I think, are doing that, at least from a home standpoint. Kids, that's the one thing. They have to go to the high school. That's the one thing. They have to go to the high school to fax, because I think that's the only place you find fax machines anymore.
We had Coach Harvey Hyde on yesterday. Back when he was a head coach, they had like four, he said they had four or five fax machines so you wouldn't get busy signals and stuff. I don't see why they probably can scan it in and email it in, I would think. I don't know, but they still seem to do this whole, fax machine thing. I don't know. It's got to change at some point, I would think.
I would think so. I think you could scan it and then just do a PDF file or something like that. It'll be much easier. I mean, you technology with smartphones and stuff like that, it's going to become a little more probably easy and accessible for a kid to be able to do it. It's actually maybe a good thing at this point, though, that the fax method does slow down the process to a certain extent because you have to fax it. And you have to go find the fax machine. You have to be at school, and you have to find the teacher or the counselor that actually knows how to work the fax machine. Because I don't know if a lot of kids, especially you're talking about high school kids these days, yeah, they don't use fax machines very often. No. I mean, and myself, I don't use fax machines very often. So from that standpoint, if there's any second thoughts or lingering doubts, then, the fax. That's maybe the one thing that saves the school that was going to be on the outs, and then the kid decides at the fax machine, as people are trying to figure out how to work the fax machine, I think I actually want to go to USC instead. And then USC gets a commit because of the fax machine.
Yeah. Well, okay, so what are we going to do on the show today? We're going to talk about the rides that are left. We're going to talk about Gerard's special war room that came out late Monday night. And we're going to answer a bunch of your questions. We also, I want to let people know, Gerard's not going to be there, but we're going to do a USCfootball.com kind of mini signing day party lunch thing at the lab across the street from the USC campus next to the Galen Center. So they open at 11 o'clock and there'll be some announcements early in the morning. So yeah, we've done these before where you get there like 8 a.m. right when the place is open. We thought we'd try one next to campus. So I'll go down. Keely will be there. Shotgun will be there. I think Dan Weber will be there. There's a press conference at 4:30. So we'll go over to that. USC also has some private, recruiting dinner. I think it's just for donors that you had to RSVP for a while for. So that's at like 6:00. And then there'll be Trojans Live at 7 p.m. At the lab. And I'll actually be a guest on that. That's Jordan Moore's, show. They do a live, like on, I think it's on the radio and on the internet and stuff too. So it's like a video show. So I'll be on that talking. I think at like 7:20, I'm scheduled to go on. So I'll be down at USC basically all day. But if you're in the neighborhood and you want to stop by for lunch, it's not going to be like a fixed menu, buy a ticket or anything. It's just kind of show up at the lab, order your, whatever you want to eat and drink and stuff and, do that. So Gerard has to stay locked down in his bunker all day. So he won't be able to make it out there, but
yeah, no, I don't see daylight very much this week,
but it should be fun. So hopefully you guys can make it out there. Do you actually have the announcement schedule in front of you, Gerard? Maybe we can go over that real quick before we start talking about the war room stuff.
I don't have anything in front of me. I know off the top of my head, you're talking about the targets that are going to announce on signing day, whether they're going to go to USC or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Levi Jones is going to be at 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that's, 7 a.m. his time, Central Time. And 8 a.m. Eastern time. I believe he's going to be doing it on ESPNU, and so that's probably why he's doing it so early. I don't know. We could probably talk about each one of these guys just going through the list and kind of kill two birds with one stone as well. Levi Jones in our War Room signing day special talked about how he's been downgraded a little bit in his forecast percentage. We had him at 70%, feeling pretty confident that he would end up at USC, but it sounds like Florida State really made an impression. They really worked him over there on his visit, which was last weekend. And you always had to take into account that last official visit. And, you got to have respect for the schools that are having those visits and take into account how well they can recruit and what they've been able to do in the past against USC. And certainly Florida State's had some successes against USC, mostly with local kids. But it sounds like, they made a big impression on Levi Jones. We knew Florida was a school that was involved with him, and his dad had a relationship with Randy Shannon, who's a defensive coordinator at Florida. But now we're seeing that Florida State is also a big time player with him. Just for my own personal read, and really I've been going off of this more than information from anybody for the longest time, just having talked to Levi Jones several times directly, I've always gotten the impression that USC was kind of the school to beat for him. I think for me it was always about not just from a football standpoint, what he was looking for in a college, but it seemed like he really liked Los Angeles. He wanted to move to Los Angeles. He just liked the city. He liked the thought of being on the West Coast. He comes off like a kid that, would do well in Los Angeles. It is kind of surprising that he would go to Tallahassee, Florida and sort of have those same feelings, but you also don't know what his parents want, and maybe there's some angle there that Florida State is playing, but USC just always felt like, that's the kind of kid that from out of state looks at USC and ends up at USC. So we'll see what happens. Right now he's been downgraded to 55% from 70%. So we basically look at these forecast percentages like the weather. If you've got a 55% chance of rain, you're probably maybe going to rain. You definitely bring an umbrella. You're sort of expecting it, but that there's a chance that's almost 50%, the other way that it may not rain, and that's sort of what we're looking at right now. It's just slightly over a chance. It's basically saying the slight chance is that he's going to go to USC at this point. That's still where we feel like he's leaning, but it can change. It's not far away from being 50-50 right now, coin toss. So that's with Levi Jones. 5 a.m. ESPN, get up bright and early, or just don't go to sleep like I do and be up at 5 a.m. to watch that announcement. You got Aubrey Solomon, five-star defensive tackle from Lee County, Leesburg, Georgia. He's a guy that we've talked about a lot last few weeks. USC kind of late to the party a little bit with his recruitment. Didn't start really recruiting him hard, I think, until just really September, October. And that may have hurt him here. Now, last we've heard that Aubrey Solomon is most likely headed to Michigan, downgraded him from a 48% to a 40%. 48% basically saying, sort of like with Levi Jones being on the side, that we think he goes to USC, but it's close. It's kind of a coin flip. We felt that way with Aubrey Solomon. It was close, but we thought it was going to go against USC. Feeling a little more confident now that it's going to go against USC. We know that Michigan has been a player for him a long time. He committed to Michigan, I believe, in April, and then decommitted over the summer. But his mom really likes Michigan, and his mom is kind of the one who runs the show there. He's going to go where his mom wants him to go, and that's been the feeling why Michigan has sort of been in the lead, even though Michigan at one point was a school that had sent him a bunch of literature and misspelled his name, and that was a big controversy. And there was a lot of talk that, you know, he didn't like Michigan and had a falling out with Michigan. Well, it doesn't maybe make that much of a difference if his mom likes Michigan. So that's sort of what we're hearing. Haven't heard anything definitive about Aubrey Solomon just yet. I shouldn't say that. Let me take that back. I did get from a pretty good source that SC was out of it, but then another equally good source kind of said, well, they're feel like they're on the outside looking in, but nothing definitive. No call has actually been made. Aubrey Solomon evidently has not called USC, you know, at that point to say that he's not going to USC. And he was supposed to make his calls to school Sunday and Monday. I'm going to follow up on that a little bit to see if Alabama or some of these other schools have heard anything from him, and then maybe, you know, make another downgrade or maybe even upgrade. But nothing actually definitive on him yet. He's going to announce at 6:45 a.m. Pacific time another ESPNU announcement.
Yeah, that's,
we have JT Fele, five-star defensive tackle. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, sorry. So that's 9:45 a.m. Eastern time, 6:45. Right. So this is another, the other early morning one. And then this next one is 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. You're talking about JT Fele, correct?
No, I have him at 8:30 a.m. right now, Pacific time. Do you have updated information on that?
So the scout, so they have 11. So 8:30 a.m. It's 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. So 8:30 a.m. Pacific time. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so
these are Pacific times. I mean, because most of the SC fans are on the West Coast, obviously. So we do this Pacific time for them. But 8:30 a.m. Pacific time will be Jay Tufele from his high school announcing. But I believe this is actually going to be streamed live on Max Preps, which will be similar to the Isaiah Polamau commitment that USC had just a couple of weeks ago, or just last week. So Jay Tufele, five-star, a guy that we started out with 55%, mainly because we just wanted to get more intel after his Utah visit. We knew USC led, and we're in a good position with him going into that visit. But again, you have a little bit of respect for that school and sort of the situation. Been doing this long enough that you just don't want to start throwing out too much lingo about how a kid is going to, where he's leaning towards, when you know that final official visit can do things, can change things for kids. And so for him, you know, Utah has done a great job recruiting Utah kids, a tremendous Polynesian tradition there, a tremendous defensive tackle tradition there. And we knew that Utah was going to come in, they're really going to hit the family hard. And that's really what they did. They brought mom in, which mom had not taken an official visit to any other school. They brought in, you know, his brother, cousins. I mean, they really casted a wide net trying to gain influence, you know, from a family standpoint. Like, hey, you know, you need to stay here. This is where, you know, your family is. This is what your home is. But the good news is that after, you know, about 24 hours, sources still indicate that USC is in a good position, and it looks like he's going to go to USC. So, you know, you kind of take that reprieve, you take a break, and you say, all right, let's just see what happens with the Utah visit, and let's see what kind of information comes from that visit. And the fact that USC is still a strong contender and sources still believe he's headed to USC after that visit is a good sign. So he got upgraded from 55 to 65%, probably could get bumped to a 70, 75%. We're going to wait and just see, you know, if we hear anything else, any kind of last-minute changes. But for Jay Tufele, USC's looking very good as well. And obviously, that's a huge get for them. Five-star defensive tackle, a guy that can come in and make immediate impact as a true freshman. Then you have Austin Jackson, another five-star. Five-star offensive tackle, 6'5", 290 pounds from Phoenix, Arizona, North Canyon High School. He's going to announce at 10 a.m. His time. I can't remember off the top of my head if he was going to do something on ESPN or if he was going to do something on Max Preps. He might be an ESPNU guy, But that's going to be 10 a.m. Pacific time.
I think it's I think it's 9 a.m. Pacific time. They have them listed as noon Eastern, at least on the Scout.
Yeah, but he's on Mountain Time, so he is an hour ahead of us still at this point, correct? Or
yeah,
I'll have to look at that.
Scout has him listed as noon Eastern, so that would be 9 Pacific time.
Yeah, so maybe I have to. Yeah, so 10 a.m. Mountain Time.
Yeah, so it's which it looks will be like his 9 a.m. Yeah. And he should be the same time as Josh Follow, it looks like.
Perhaps. We didn't – I don't think we had Josh Follow. We don't have his time listed right now. We need to update that. But so he will be 9 a.m. along with Josh Follow. Austin Jackson, a guy that we have at 90%, that's almost about as high as it gets. We really don't do 100% just because, you know, I mean – maybe occasionally. Maybe he'll be the first guy to get bumped up to 100%. But we know Action Jackson, Austin Jackson has made his calls. There's not really a lot of mystery to this one, and so it'll come down between Arizona State and USC. He's at 90%. That's really, really high coming out of the gates, and he's going to commit 9 a.m. Pacific time, 10 a.m. Mountain time. Leave on ESPNU. I'm not 100% sure of that, though. We'll update that when we can. Talking about Josh Fallow, yeah, Josh Fallow just set a time for his announcement day. That's going to be at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Josh Fallow is a guy that a lot of people actually had to Oregon. And this is sort of what you know, with the experience and you haven't done this for a while, you see how things change and sort of the ebb and flow of the recruiting process, you know, this week up until signing day. And with Josh Fallow, 6'5", 230, pound tight end, 4-star, a guy that took his official visit to USC January 20th and then followed that up with an official visit to Oregon. Oregon has been a player for him for a long time. Oregon was a school that a lot of people thought maybe during the spring he would commit to. And then over the summer he kind of backed off of that. The problem with Josh Fallow that we've known kind of going into these visits is that whoever had his last visit, he's going to like that school. I mean, every visit he raved about, and it seemed like that was the school that was leading for him after that official visit. But we got some real good intel last night that sounds like Josh Fowler is going to go to USC. He was at 50-50 coming into that Oregon visit, mainly because, you know, like I said, we didn't really know how that Oregon visit was going to affect him. We knew that he liked USC, and USC was really the lead school, I think, after his official visit. But again, I mean, that doesn't really mean a whole lot. He can be a silent commitment after his official visit to USC. But when you're going into a school on your last visit and that school has been a contender for you for a long time, granted they got a new coaching staff and this and that, but it's still a school that the kid has liked for a long time. You gotta respect that. You gotta take that into account. You can't slap that word lock on kids because when they got one visit left in the official process and that school is a school that has been a contender for a long time, anything can happen. And so we took that into account, kind of said, all right, this is going to be a little 50-50 thing. Coming away from that official visit to Oregon, tons of talk of like, he's going to Oregon, he's going to Oregon. And plenty of writers at this point are making predictions that he's going to Oregon. We got a couple of sources, very good sources, indicating he's going to go to USC. And really the tip.
So you shouldn't listen to those other writers because they don't know what they're talking about. Is that what you're saying, Gerard?
I'm saying we've been doing this a long time. And we're very good at it, and we have a track record to show it. But the thing is, we get a lot of information, and you kind of have to know where that information is coming from. Sometimes it's from the perspective of USC, and you have to know with a guy like Josh Fallow, he could tell USC something and then tell another school something else, and you always have to understand that part of the process. You got to try to get sources for different positions and different places in recruitment to kind of get the whole story. And what really was kind of the thing that was the tipping point for me is when we got some information actually coming from the Colorado end of things that he was going to go to USC and he had eliminated Colorado. And that sort of really reinforced what we were hearing from sources that were closer to his recruitment from a USC standpoint. So since then, we've actually even had more indication that he's heading from USC from sources unassociated with USC. So feel pretty good about that pick. 75% now, which is, again, pretty high. Still, you know, leaving a little bit of feel there for, you know, maybe a last-minute change of heart or something. But it sounds like Josh Fallow is going to be a Trojan. Javon Kinlaw.
Well, hold on one second, Gerard. Just real quick on that. I think that's important. That's you know, when people ask about sources and things like that, and I think what, and Gerard won't ever say this, but what makes him, Gerard, so good at what he does is there's plenty of people that, like, you know somebody or you hear one thing, somebody tells you something, and they, and, you know, a lot of our message board posters, they maybe know a family member or friend or whatever, and they post something that they hear, but that's always coming from one perspective. And what makes Gerard good is that you hear something and you don't just run and report it. You're like, okay, well, that's from this point of view. Does that person have an axe to grind? Does that person have, are they trying to, you know, set something up or throw something out there? And you have to kind of balance all of the information that you get together and then come up with a conclusion of, okay, that makes sense. What I'm hearing over here jives with what I'm hearing over there. And this, you know, so there's a logical conclusion. That's probably what's happening right now. Not, I just heard one thing and just start telling people about it. So I think, you know, it's like I tell people, if you were best friends with Clay Helton and he told you everything he knew about USC recruiting, you still wouldn't know everything because he doesn't know everything, because a lot, his coaches have different ideas, some than him sometimes. If you only hear from USC coaches and the player tells him I'm coming, but the player also told five other schools he's coming, those coaches might not know that. So it's kind of funny, but you have to be able to talk to everyone. And I think that's what you do a really good job of, Gerard.
Yeah, I don't know anything about talking to coaches. I just know the janitors at USC because I'm Mexican. That's
right.
It.
But it's people. It's funny. It's like if you're like, oh, if I knew Clay Helton and he told me everything, like if you only had one source and it was Clay Helton, you probably wouldn't know as much as you know now if you weren't allowed to talk to anybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, actually, I mean, a good example of this, I don't want to take us off track here because we were kind of rolling here on these announcements, but just as sort of an example of that, the Julian Falonico situation with him, and there's all these rumors that USC was going to drop him, and a lot of people basically just reporting like he's done, they're dropping him. He's going to go to Oregon, or he's going to go to Oregon State or what have you, because USC doesn't have room for him. The great thing about being a part of the scout network and having Greg Biggins and Brandon Huffman and Blair and Gulo and being able to talk with those guys, we were able to sort of hash some things out, and I was able to have some information and say, okay, you know, this is what I'm hearing. You're hearing something different. Where are you hearing it from? And where is the weak link in this chain of sources? And we were able to figure it out pretty quickly. Okay, this is what's going on. Understood that, you know, really the rumors started actually from the Oregon coaching staff basically telling Julian Falonico's trainer, yeah, USC's going to drop you. They don't have enough room. Look at how many recruits they have. Look at how many commits that they have and what they can take, and you're going to get cut. And the funny thing is that Joe Saavedra, who is now Oregon's defensive line coach, actually his family kind of lives right in the same neighborhood as Julian Falonica in Pago Pago, Samoa. So that's kind of an interesting side note. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, that there's trust there. And so it's one of those things that USC has now had to work against that rumor that, oh, you know, now Julian, because it gets back to Julian Falonico that, hey, he's getting cut. And all of a sudden he starts thinking he's getting cut. And so USC has actually gone so far as to send him his letter of intent. Already, he was one of the first commits. He may have been the only commit that actually got his letter of intent that early on. Usually, they don't send him out until like the day before, a couple days before. But he got his letter of intent early, and so that was kind of like, look at you. You've got the signature. You know, you've got it all in your. You can send it in. I think it's 7 a.m. Pacific time, or maybe it's 7 a.m. I think it depends. If it can be 7 a.m. I think if you're in the East Coast, you can send it in early. Or, you know, him obviously being behind, Pacific time because he's in Samoa, he can send it in 7 a.m. Pacific time. But anyways, I mean, he's got that for him, so he can send it in right away and not have to worry about being bumped out in the class or what have you. But that was one of those situations that, you know, I'm getting a lot of good information and information that I trust, but maybe is more one-sided than I would like and able to bounce it off of some other guys that are incredibly good at what they do, you know, around me in the network and getting information from different standpoints and different sources and being able to kind of hash that out. So that really worked. And so that's, you know, kind of how we've been confident about, Giuliano Falonico, ending up at USC. But digressing back to the list of guys, I think we're at 1 p.m. So 1 p.m. is going to be an interesting time for USC. They're going to have a few different announcements coming out. One is going to be Elijah Blades, who, you know, we're not really sure what's going to happen with Elijah Blades. Kind of an interesting story. He's a guy that had a scholarship offer from USC. USC recruited him, but he was committed to Florida. He just recently decommitted from Florida. And that last weekend where he was scheduled to take an official visit to USC, he instead decided to go ahead and sign up and play in the under-19 national game against Canada, which I believe was held in Texas. And so he didn't take that official visit to USC. Now, a lot of people immediately thought, well, hey, that's fantastic. He can be an advanced scholarship guy. He can be a quote-unquote blue shirt guy. Well, no, because he had some in-home visits with Ronnie Bradford, the defensive backs coach at USC. So that automatically eliminates him from being able to blue shirt. So that the whole advanced scholarship thing is out the window with Elijah Blades. So he's got to take a standard scholarship offer, and the only way that's going to happen is if USC misses out on probably more than one guy. So, you know, Elijah Blades right now we have at 30%. Was thinking of bumping him to 40%, but he's still at that 30%. I think that that scenario is a little unlikely right now that they're going to have room to be able to take him. But he does end up committing at 1 p.m., so it's a little later in the day. You're going to have Aubrey Solomon. You're going to have Levi Jones already, you know, make their decisions at that point. So, you know, it gives USC some time to maneuver, you know, and figure out if there actually is room to maybe try to get Elijah Blades in. Most people think he's going to head to Nebraska if he doesn't go to USC. Also, a player for two of these other recruits is Nebraska, Joseph Lewis, five-star wide receiver from Hawkins High School, and Greg Johnson, the four-star athlete from Hawkins High School. Joseph Lewis was a number one receiver in the country for a long time. Now he's ranked the number two receiver in the country, 6'3", 200 pounds, a guy that has been probably the best receiver in Southern California the past 2 years, regardless of class. He's a guy we have at 85%, feel pretty good about him, felt really good about him going to USC, even going into his official visit to USC. That was sort of a deal sealer, I think, in my opinion. He'd taken a couple unofficial visits to USC, actually, previous week. So he's been to USC a lot in the past few weeks, and it looks good for USC. We have Greg Johnson at 80%, a little less just because we know, you know, that there was a point in time after the Army All-American Bowl where he was looking at USC and he was kind of not sure about USC. I think the playing time aspect, and certainly with all the talk of Darnay Holmes maybe going to USC, that was sort of pushing him away from USC. So Nebraska was there. Nebraska, you know, made a big push for him when they hired Dante Williams, who was the defensive backs coach at Arizona. And Dante Williams has, you know, great connections in Los Angeles. And when Nebraska basically hired him, that was a signal, hey, you know, we want to recruit Hawkins High School in inner city LA a lot harder. And he had a great relationship having already been committed to Arizona. And so when Williams made that move to Nebraska, a lot of people assumed, yeah, he's just going to go to Nebraska. But USC has come in strong. Obviously, you know, they didn't get Darnay Holmes, and they really put the full court press on Gavin Morris and T. Martin, that tag team. That's a hell of a tag team in recruiting. I don't know if there's too many better tag teams, and they really worked on both these guys at Hawkins. And it sounds like Greg Johnson, really, we feel confident he's going to end up at USC 80% just because he did have a little bit of that hesitation, and he took an Oregon visit, and there is Nebraska there. And so he leaves a little bit of leeway there, but 80% chance of rain is probably going to rain. And I guess the final guy that we have on the list is Javon Kinlaw. He's already stated that he's basically going to commit and go to South Carolina. He said he's 100% committed to South Carolina. I think what he stated was he's going to South Carolina. He's signing with South Carolina, but he hasn't committed yet, which I don't know. That's some JUCO Mississippi logic. I don't know what that even means. Four-star defensive tackle. Actually, he's been placed by South Carolina at Jones County Junior College, which is in Mississippi. So that's tough sledding for USC in that kind of country. We gave him a 25%, probably could be even lower than that, but you know, 25% is pretty low in and of itself, but consider it a long shot, I mean, throughout for USC. But Kenichi Odizzi did take a swing at it, and you know, you never knew with Stevie Tuikolovatu and sort of his success there as a transfer that 1 year, what he was able to do at USC, how that would impact or draw interest from the junior college levels. But you know what, when you're doing good like USC is at the high school level in terms of recruiting with Jay Tufele and Brandon Peely and some of these guys that they've been able to recruit, then you're not so hung up on trying to bring in a guy like Kinlaw, who's an immediate impact player just from a junior college standpoint.
Whew. All right. So that's signing day in a nutshell.
That's like half the war room, basically, verbalized, more or less. I mean, we covered a lot of stuff, though. We covered Blades. You know, that's going to be, we'll have to see what happens with that. You know, he can't take the advanced scholarship. So that, I think that's a big impact with him, and that makes it tougher to get him in. You know, there's some plan Bs. Talked a little bit in the war room about, you know, Michael Owusu being a potential advanced scholarship guy. Potential. It's not a for sure yet. He was offered that, but we don't know if USC is going to make that move. Myron Tagovailoa is another guy, three-star defensive tackle from Kapolei High School in Hawaii. He's a guy that is potential sort of plan C, maybe. Seems like it won't happen, though, if they get Jay Tufele. So there are some guys there that are some backup plans, but more or less, I think we sort of see a good majority of what USC's class is going to look like Wednesday, you know, with any unforeseen surprises going against USC.
So we're going to have our little event at the lab, and by the time we get to the lab at 11 a.m., because that's the earliest they open, the majority of the drama will already be over. So it'll just be more of kind of a hanging out thing. Of course, 1 o'clock, there'll be some announcements, you know, with Greg Johnson and Joseph Lewis. And I think Blades is then too, right? Is that what you said at 1?
Blades, yeah, 1 p.m. We're not sure when he's or how he's going to announce. I believe Joseph Lewis and Greg Johnson, I forgot to mention, that they're both ESPNU as well. So they'll be televised. Not sure about Josh Fallow. He just announced that he was going to do it at 9 a.m. And Blades, yeah, we're not sure. Blades could be another Max Preps deal. We'll update all of these, obviously, before tomorrow morning.
Yeah, so that's so we'll have something going on, you know, at least a few players announcing during our little gathering and get together, and then really the only other drama the rest of the afternoon would be, is Stephen Carr doing anything, Gerard? What's his schedule like? He's still committed to USC. Is there?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. I mean, obviously he's going to have a signing day ceremony. I'm supposed to talk with him before signing day. I haven't really reached out to him lately just because of all the drama and all this talk about UCLA and everything. Still confident that he ends up at USC. I think that there was just a little bit of drama there just for the sake of drama. And it's hard for me to rationalize, and obviously this is where you get into trouble when you start trying to bring logic into the recruiting process. But I was trying to think of any reason why you would go to UCLA. And I know that sounds very disrespectful to UCLA fans, but just with the current state of the program, the new offense, I understand they're trying to do more of a sort of Stanford thing with the new offensive coordinator, sort of, you know, the Michigan deal. I don't know, though. It just seems like, you know, they've got Soso Jumonbo there, who was a former four-star, five-star running back. They've got some guys. It's not like he can come in and play right away. There's a lot of kind of stuff there. You're trying to figure out what's the factor that would draw him to UCLA as a guy who grew up being a USC fan his whole life. His family is really all USC fans. His mom has always wanted him to go to USC, and all of a sudden he's just going to change and pivot because, you know, you're trying to figure out why. What's the answer there? Why would he do it? Is there's something there, you know? I mean, he has a good relationship with Deshaun Foster is the new running backs coach there and made a great move on him. I mean, you've got to look at Deshaun Foster kind of as Kenichi Odizi to some extent. He's a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience, obviously, at the position as a full-time coach. He was kind of a support staff guy at UCLA for a while. I think he went over to Texas Tech and was a running backs coach maybe for a season or two, and now is back at UCLA. Doesn't have, obviously, the NFL pedigree that Kenichi Odizi does, but a guy that, you know, played well in college and has a name and I think is going to be a really good recruiter for UCLA and had a good relationship with Stephen Carr when he was a support staff member at UCLA. So, you know, there was definitely a connection there, and he made a good run to Stephen Carr, but you're still kind of trying to figure out, okay, what at this point in time where USC's program is right now and where UCLA's program is, and then you're starting to look at depth charts and you're seeing, there's going to be a guy there he's going to have to compete against no matter what. It just doesn't make sense why he wouldn't go to USC. But again, that's logic, and recruiting doesn't always go with logic.
It certainly does not. So, okay, so that'll be – should be a fairly crazy day. Then we'll have the press conference. It'll be at 4:30. So that'll be streamed live on usctrojans.com, and we'll probably do it, too, like on Periscope or something, and we'll definitely be talking about it. And we'll all be down there. Well, Dan Shotgun and Keely and I will be down at USC. So we'll get some interviews and, you know, some analysis from going on from what ends up being on, signing day. What, anything else in the war room you wanted to share, Gerard, before we,
No, I think we covered the war room pretty good. You know, obviously the talk of Oregon telling kids they're going to get dropped by USC, we sort of covered that. And obviously the Elijah Blade situation and any sort of plan Bs, plan Cs, sort of covered that as well. The war room's there, you know, people can read in detail sort of all these things and the circumstances and the situations and the context, which is probably a little better stated in the war room than we're talking about now.
Okay, well, let's jump into the questions then, unless there's anything else you wanted to go over first.
No, let's do questions, because I'm sure some of these questions are going to overlap with the war room anyways.
Yeah. So first we'll just, Matt, it's not really a question. He goes, I know you guys like overseas callers, but I'm sitting here in the Vatican listening to G-Mart. Fight on.
Holy cow, young Pope, huh?
Yeah, fight. He said fight in. I don't know if that was a typo or if he was just fighting in. Matt.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, fight in.
Especially with the smoke, you know, awesome. The white smoke and the gray smoke or whatever. Like, that's perfect, you know.
That was a thing for a while. Yeah, the white smoke. That was like a thing on the peristyle. I think that had to do with the new head coaching hire, if there was white smoke. I think that was sort of an inside joke for a while in the peristyle. But from the Vatican, that's awesome. That's, yeah. Yeah, cause they have Wi-Fi in the Vatican.
Yeah, because when they're like trying to pick a pope, right? Like that's when you know when they made a decision, like white smoke or whatever. I forget what the specifics are, but I think that's
yes.
what the
yes.
the analysis was. Okay, thanks for that, Matt. Rudy wrote in, he said, is there any chance that Lichtenstein decommits and we pick up Chasen in his place? That's what he's talking about? Do you know?
No. No chance.
No chance of that.
No chance.
I
wouldn't say there's no chance of Lichtenstein decommitting. It's very doubtful at this point from what I hear, but there's no chance that they go after Chasen. I forget his first name off the top of my head. It's like Kavion Chasen. But he never officially visited. He was scheduled to officially visit January 27th, but canceled that visit. So, yeah, USC's not gonna be in it with him.
That's not going to be one of the things. Okay. Let's see. Neil in Manila, speaking of overseas, he says, will you guys make another podcast before signing day? Yes, we will, Neil. And if you do, do you guys think Joseph Lewis or any other wide receiver on the roster can replicate Darius Rogers' clutch catching on third down? Thanks and fight on. It's more of an analysis than a, but what do you think?
But good question nonetheless. I think it's tough to put that on a freshman, obviously. I think that Joseph Lewis has that potential to be Darius Rogers, if not better. He is a guy that can make the clutch catch. I will say that about Joseph Lewis. Joseph Lewis, that's the thing that really, to me, makes him a five-star and as good as he is that he has the talent, he has the speed and size, and he looks the part. But he makes those hard catches. He's been able, and really, I look at the 7-on-7 circuit with him almost on the same footing as I do during the season, because he's playing against better competition, quite frankly, in the 7-on-7 scene. And in those situations, the guy is money. He is the guy you try to get the ball to on third down. You try to make the big catch. He has always taken that on with B2G. He was always the guy that was that dominant force when they needed to move the sticks. And so he makes that clutch catch and has always been that guy that's been physical and tough. And really, even going back to his junior year, he was that guy for them. I think he can become that guy as a true freshman. I think that's difficult. I think if you're looking on the roster right now for the guy that can be really good on third downs, I think you look no further than Deontay Burnett. I mean, we saw how big he was in the Penn State game, but in terms of hands, he's phenomenal. I mean, he just catches the football. He's not the biggest guy in the world, and he's really not the fastest guy in the world, but he catches the football. He runs good routes, and that's really important, and I think that's something that's going to be there for USC in the slot. Obviously, you'd like to see, you know, maybe Steven Mitchell be able to come off that knee injury and be a guy that can be consistent on third down. We just haven't seen it in the past. We haven't seen it really from a lot of the guys, because they're going to have a lot of youth coming in with that 2015-16 class. Those guys are now going to have to step up. I think another name to throw out there would be Tyler Vaughns. Again, not as physical as Darius Rogers, and that's sort of going to be missing. But I think from a standpoint of route running and just catching the football, just when there's contact, when there's a guy draped on him, no matter what, still just catches the football. Tyler Vaughn says, no, those guys are very consistent, and I think that's going to be a big deal for Sam Darnold. The trust factor is going to have to be built there from the guys that just catch the football.
All right. Thanks, Neil, for that one. David wants to know, which of the recruits does GM project getting the most playing time as freshmen? So another kind of analysis thing.
Yeah, and he says recruits, so it kind of opens it up to even the guys that haven't committed already. Certainly, I think along the defensive line, USC's recruiting talent and depth there, so that's a place where they feel like there's going to be some guys to be able to come in and play early. Jay Tufele, I think, will definitely play early. He's a guy that, especially if USC's going to a more of a three-man front instead of running a 2-4-5, you're going to have an extra defensive lineman in there, and I think a guy like Jay Tufele is definitely going to make an impact early on. Talking about Joseph Lewis, I think Joseph Lewis can make an impact. I think the biggest thing with Joseph Lewis is in order for him to get in that rotation and kind of break into that starting rotation, it's going to be how well he processes the playbook. That's going to be the biggest thing for him. I think with in terms of talent and in terms of that ability just to make plays, it's there. He's got the speed. He's got the size. He's got all those things. But it's a matter of knowing your routes and knowing the calls and getting the calls from the sideline or getting adjustments from Sam Darnold. That's going to be a big thing. You know, USC, from some standpoint, you kind of look at the offense and you think they have a higher ceiling than most offenses because Sam Darnold was young. And Sam Darnold, you know, is only going to get better from the standpoint of being able to make audibles at the line, to be able to see things and make reads at the line, where maybe he wasn't able to do that so much as a redshirt freshman. But you have to look at the other side of that and look at the receivers he's going to be playing with. Those guys have to understand those signals. Those guys have to understand those checks at the line, and it's going to be a young group. So I think with Joseph Lewis, he has all the talent and ability to be able to be that guy, but it's really going to be a matter of processing. Can he come in and understand the playbook and learn the checks and be that guy to be able to, you know, process the playbook and make those plays from that? I think offensive line, you're looking at a guy like Austin Jackson. You're losing your two starting offensive tackles and Chad Wheeler and Zach Banner. I think Austin Jackson is going to make a push there. Is he going to be able to play right away? I don't know. It's just going to be a matter of physicality. I think certainly he has that ability to do what Chuma Adoga did as a true freshman. I think he can play a rotational standpoint, and certainly if they want to go with a heavy set and put an extra tackle in there, for sure he's going to get playing time. So that's another guy that I think will definitely be in there. The safeties, that position, because you lose Leon McQuay. USC's got some good safeties, though. It's going to be a question as to, you know, whether Jamel Cook is really able to come in. And again, he's got the playbook down. Clancy Pendergast trusts him, because that's why Chris Hawkins is going to play. That's why Marvell Tell is going to play. It's a matter of trust with Clancy Pendergast. And I think with most defensive coordinators, you just don't want to get a guy in there that no matter how talented he is, he could give up seven. You just don't want to give up easy scores on broken coverages. And we saw that early in the season with USC at the Alabama game where you just had some broken coverages. So that's going to be the main hurdle for those safeties. And you got Jamel Cook, who's got a, you know, a red shirt under his belt. Can he come in and process, sort of similar, talking about Joseph Lewis, can he come in and process that playbook? Or is a guy like Isaiah Palomao or Bubba Bolden be able to come in and play early? Because those guys are smart, too, and they could learn that playbook really fast and jump maybe somebody.
It was funny. There was a tweet I just saw from Javon Kinlaw. He says, change of plans, commitment tomorrow night. So I don't know. Maybe there's something different with him.
Tomorrow night. So that's going to be does he give
this
a time
live
for that?
While we're taping the show, I just see a tweet like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow night is going to be, I mean, it still could be almost afternoon our time. I don't know. You know, I mean, tomorrow night's going to be signing day night, which is a little odd to do it later rather than just do it earlier.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. Question. This is one from David. He says, if things unfold as you expect and SC has a top 4-7 class, what does that tell us about Coach Clay Helton and his staff? Better recruiters / closers than many thought? Question. David.
Well, yes, although we sort of saw with the last year's class that they closed really well. It's just a matter of consistency. I mean, closer is sort of Clay Helton's middle name right now, because obviously with the recruiting class that they had last year, it started out really mediocre. And obviously with, you know, not being able to get all those coaches on staff until, I don't know, it was like 2 weeks into January, a lot of people were thinking, wow, this is not coming together seamlessly like, you know, it should have. And yet they still pulled together a really good class. So they closed really strong, especially considering the circumstances that they closed under. Then you look at the season, and we've talked about this. We've made parallels before with this, and we made parallels with the recruiting class last year and the season with this recruiting class earlier. I mean, we were sitting here in September, August saying, you know what, don't get so caught up in recruiting right now. We've seen what USC has done with last year's recruiting class. We just have to wait and see. And then we got after the season, and we looked at how they started the season, how they ended the season. It was even more evidence that, look, it's not really how you start, it's how you finish. And so now we're coming to the end of this recruiting class, and we're seeing another strong finish. So I would say Clay Helton's a great closer. I think that the staff and sort of how he's doing things, it's all about sort of the fourth quarter. And I remember Pete Carroll used to say, you can't win a game in the first quarter. You know, one of his mottos was, you know, it's a four-quarter game, and you can't win a game unless you're playing in the fourth quarter. And that's sort of how this staff and everybody has taken to recruiting. And, you know, last season, that's basically how the season played out itself. So, yeah, I think we can say that they've been very strong closers.
Thanks for that one. Let's go. We got Paul in Santa Clarita. He says, hello, Gerard. Any chance that Terrence Lang eventually switches to an offensive tackle? If he did, how do you think he would do? Thanks from Paul.
Huh, that's a good question. I know that's come up before. Is there a chance? Certainly, there's always a chance. There's always a chance that a player can switch position. And a guy with his feet, and you're talking about a really good basketball player, that's always something that you keep in the back of your mind. How good would he be? It's tough to say because he's never played offensive tackle before. We've never seen him in a drill where he would be a pass blocker. But I could see there being a possibility for that, definitely. He's a guy that's got all the physical skills. Anybody who can be a very good three-technique defensive lineman, you can look at and say, well, he could possibly be a very good offensive lineman as well. It's really going to be a matter of physicality, aggressiveness, and instincts. Does he have the instincts and the awareness in a gap defense to be able to make plays? Is he going to be quick enough and aggressive enough to get off of blocks, to shed blocks, toughness? Those kind of questions, those intangibles are really what come in to play when you're looking at a guy as a defensive lineman. And if he's short on those, then you start to think, okay, wait, he's a little more passive, but he's a guy that's got the physical ability, he's got the wingspan, he's got the feet to be able to play as a pass protector and maybe be a guy that can do a little more on the edge of an offense as a pass protector than a guy that's actually rushing the passer. You still have to be, you know, physical, obviously, and tough to play offensive line, but it's a little different situation in terms of, you know, you're always going upfield as a defensive lineman. You're always attacking as a defensive lineman. As an offensive lineman, sometimes you're going to be back on your heels, and you got to play that game as a pass protector. Another thing, though, as an offensive lineman, you got to be smart. And USC's really pushed to recruit, you know, smart offensive linemen. That's going to be an issue. Defensive line doesn't take quite as much processing. You don't have to know quite as much. Again, it's a little bit of blow the whistle and go get them. And so that's also going to come into play well. So, yeah, I think there's a possibility. I think he could do it, but it's really going to come down to, you know, aggressiveness, instincts, and those type of things. He's a bigger asset as a three technique, certainly, for USC right now, if he can come in and he can contribute. I don't expect him to. I think he's probably going to need a red shirt, but, you know, certainly down the line, you know, a left tackle is obviously just a big deal. I think probably when you're looking from an NFL draft standpoint, you know, those left tackles are always going to get paid more than the three technique defensive linemen, but both of those are pretty important. So, you know, it just depends, I think, on need for USC down the line when he's ready to step in and actually play.
Tarek had a question. Between Bubba Bolden and Isaiah Pulumau, the two big USC safeties that are committed, who do you see getting on the field first? And is it possible one or both take a red shirt?
I don't think so. I think it's very, I think the possibility of them both taking red shirts is very low. I think just because the safety position, you can play special teams, you can be involved with kick return, you know, punt team, even punt return. There's just a lot of special team contribution that a safety can give. So I don't think both of those guys would redshirt. Will one of them redshirt? Possibly. But I kind of think even still there's a possibility with USC, the way they used three safeties last year, they both could end up getting on the field. Now, who gets on the field first? You know, we talked about this a little bit with Blair Angulo in the Future Impact piece with Isaiah Polamalu, and he felt Bubba Bolden had the better chance at maybe playing early just because of, A, the competition level he's played against in high school, I think, which is a good point. You know, Bishop Gorman plays the best teams nationally, and so he's played at a very high level, and he's played very well at a very high level. Isaiah Polamalu hasn't really seen that in high school playing at Mountain Point, but I've seen Isaiah Polamalu play really well at the opening finals, and obviously that's no pads at 7-on-7, but he surprised me how well he played. And that's a guy that, with his versatility, you can kind of plug in a bunch of different places. I sort of see him filling more of the Chris Hawkins role. I think he's a little more of a box safety, maybe plays a little closer to the line of scrimmage. But, you know, they both could end up contributing. It's who gets on the field first. I have to sort of agree with Blair. I think with Bubba Bolden, he probably fills that role of McQuay a little bit, Leon McQuay. I think he's sort of single high safety, maybe a better coverage guy. But it's closer than I think a lot of people think. I think people sleep on Isaiah Polamalu and his talent and really his ability to cover. They look at him, 6'4", 195 pounds, and you think, you know what, he's going to gain weight and he's going to end up playing linebacker. And I see that, and there's definitely an argument for that. But when you watch him play side on the sideline as a single high safety, you're shocked at how well he plays and how well he reads and reacts and gets his hand on the ball, how he's able to take angles. And that's really what it's about. It's about ball skills, seeing that pass in the air and making a good play on it. And he does that very well. So I think both those guys could end up playing as freshmen, neither of them redshirt. Who gets on the field first? Probably Bubba Bolden, just because I think fundamentally and just competition-wise, he's not going to be overwhelmed maybe as much as Isaiah Polamalu will be when he first gets on campus.
Let's go to Bobby in Lake Elsinore. He said, I've been noticing that Nebraska is always in the mix with quite a bit of USC's recruits. Is there something that coaches should be worried about or just keep fighting on? I love when people ask about, should I be worried about this? I'm like, I don't think you should be worried about that, but you know, whatever. It's, what do you think though? Should the coaches be worried?
No. If you're USC and you're going to the Rose Bowl, you're not worried about Nebraska. Nebraska has made a really big push into trying to recruit California, certainly because Mike Riley, with all his West Coast ties and a lot of the coaching staff that he brought with him from Oregon State, those guys were West Coast guys. So they're going to recruit California hard. But if you're USC and you're doing what you need to do on the field, no, you're not worried about Nebraska. And certainly the top end players at Nebraska was recruiting out West, and the whole three stripes life thing with the Adidas thing and the whatever. It's tough when it gets down to this nitty gritty and you've got USC winning, the Rose Bowl. It's tough to recruit Southern California or inner city Los Angeles against them. You're really going after the more peripheral three-star, low four-star guys that maybe you're competing against UCLA, who's losing, or Washington, or somebody else on the West Coast you're trying to sneak some guys away from. So you're not going head-to-head really a lot with the top-end five-star guys with a UCLA or USC. Even UCLA, and when they're losing, it's going to be tough to get a guy like Darnay Holmes. I just, you know, the whole Calibraska thing, I sort of chuckled that throughout the year because I just knew at this time of year we would see exactly what is happening. They're basically going after the guys like, you know, Elijah Blaze, hopefully crossing their fingers that he, you know, USC doesn't have room for him, or some other guys that are, you know, kind of more peripheral guys and not, you know, Joseph Lewis or those type of guys. I mean, they've made definitely a good push for those guys, but I think it's always going to be tough for them to go into Southern California and take those guys. Just like it'd be tough for them to go into Texas. You know, it's just Nebraska's in a difficult point. They got to win a lot of games. I mean, they got to somehow find Tom Osborne part two to be able to go into some of these places that they need to recruit, because obviously they don't have a lot of inherent recruiting advantages in Nebraska. They've got to go out of state for a majority of their players, certainly almost all of their skill players. And it's difficult in this day and age, and what makes it more difficult is when those schools and those areas are good. And, you know, you're trying to go into Florida, and you got Florida State there, or you got Florida there, and they're winning games. You're trying to go into Texas, and, you know, right now, really, Nebraska should be going into Texas probably harder because of the lack of stability and continuity with those big programs like Texas and Texas A&M. But, you know, Texas and Texas A&M are still even going to get their guys. Even if Nebraska is beating them, you're still going to end up having to kind of get the second tier guys just because there's going to be some of those kids that just grew up Longhorn fans. No matter how bad Texas may be, they're still just going to go to Texas. So it's always a difficult place, you know, to recruit from Nebraska. And if you're going up in, you know, Los Angeles, I think kids in California are definitely always open-minded, and they seem to be more open-minded than other places in the country as far as traveling. It's still difficult when USC's winning. USC's got to be bad. UCLA's got to be bad in order to come in here and grab, you know, those upper echelon type players.
We got Rick in La Mirada. He said, thanks for straightening me out over Clay Helton. Appreciate it. So I think I don't remember specifically Rick, but I think he was one of the guys that was really worried about the recruiting class and they were getting too many three-star guys and stuff. But he says, as for now, looking forward, way forward, how much faith should be placed in 2018 commits carrying it until they sign? So right now there's only five 2018 commits, but he said class looks special, but players are so fickle these days. What's your take on it? Example, QB Matt Corral could be a serious brick to sustaining USC's attempt to build a solid future for the team. Love it and thanks, from Rick.
Not a whole lot. Obviously, there are those outliers nowadays. A guy like Matt Corral that USC obviously wants and they're going to want, and he's a guy that, you know, being a quarterback, you want to keep committed. Being a quarterback, they tend to stay committed, you know, more often, but that's not even really true anymore. I mean, Tate Martell committed to like four schools. Shea Patterson committed to a couple schools. There's a lot of guys that have committed to multiple schools, even as quarterbacks in recent years. So there's not a lot of stock to put into it. I mean, there's a lot of guys. We talked about this last podcast, I think, and I mentioned out of their committed class, there's guys that I could see not ending up at USC. And I still think that. I think that there's guys that are committed now in 2018 that may not be a part of that class when it comes to signing day. I think the offers early mean nothing. The commitments early mean nothing. You got to look past the just what's there at the surface. And like I said, a guy like Matt Corral, I mean, I've seen him play in person. He's the real deal. USC knows he's the real deal. He's a local guy. Going to Oaks Christian. USC's had good success at Oaks Christian. That's one that you put stock in. But there's other ones that you just kind of go, it's a guy that's committed, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the position. We'll see what happens on USC side of things in terms of evaluations, because we've seen this past year guys that got committed early and they got evaluated and they just weren't the guys that USC thought they were going to be, and they shook loose from the class. And then there's other guys that have grade issues. And then there's other guys that, you know, if USC didn't have a great year this year, may have decommitted just because they had better options. And that's always another side of this, is the recruits themselves, they're pretty wishy-washy. You know, it's really a commitment reservation. Now, I know I've talked about this before, but I feel like the lingo and the language that we use as writers should change. It should have changed years ago, because we're talking about guys being soft verbals and nonsense like that. Which, what does that mean? A whisper? Is that a whisper? Why don't we just use the word whisper? All right, in journalism, I'll learn to use words efficiently. Be clear. Be decisive in your language. And we're talking about soft verbal. And so I think, you know, what is it really now when a kid makes a verbal commitment in the spring? 9 times out of 10, it's just a reservation of sorts. He wants to get his foot in the door with the school. He wants to make sure that he has a ride somewhere. And that might be a little bit naive, thinking, oh, well, I committed somewhere, so they have to take me, because we've seen that that's not true anymore. But in his own mind, he's thinking, hey, you know what? I might get hurt my senior season. Never know what happens. I want to make sure I secure a scholarship somewhere. And then after the, you know, the season's over with and the recruiting process begins to pick up in November and December, they start looking around. And if USC is, you know, that 1-3 turned into a 3-7, guess what? A lot of those kids are going, I got another scholarship somewhere else. I think I'm going to go there. That's a better program. There's more stability there. I like the coaches, whatever. I'm not going to go to USC, especially without a state kids. You're going to see that. You know, we saw it with the 2012 class where USC lost the Sun Bowl and they ended up going 7-5. I think it was 7-5 or 7-6.
7-6. Remember? 7-6.
7-6. Yeah, and they lost a bunch of those good players in that class that were committed. Jalen Ramsey, Eddie Vanderdose, etc. And so, you know, it goes both ways. It's a two-way street nowadays. So, yeah, do I put much stock into it? No, I don't. I think you just have to look deeper into who's committed and how committed the school is. And you know, like I said, I don't look at Matt Corral as a 2018 commit the same way I would look at maybe some of those other players.
Eric in Sun Devil country. I'm heading out that way, actually, for Super Bowl weekend. So maybe I'll see you out there, Eric, going to the golf tournament out there, which is supposed to be really fun, and then going, you know, watching the Super Bowl. So it should be a good time. While Gerard stays home and goes covers a passing tournament, by the way. So are you going to cover that, Gerard, by the way?
I am going to the King of the IE tournament,
nice,
which will be in Temecula.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's no rest for the wicked here.
No, there's no rest. Though I'm going on a resty weekend away, so sorry about that. But I will be. With the closing success of the season and a big win in the Rose Bowl, do you know of any recruits whose commitment was tipped to USC with that win in the granddaddy of them all? So anyone that wasn't going to go to USC, but USC won the Rose Bowl, and now they are going to USC. Thanks and fight on, Eric in Sun Devil country.
No. No, I don't think anybody's going to USC because they won the Rose Bowl. I think that winning the Rose Bowl helped continue to show that the program is headed in the right direction and that, you know, Clay Helton did a special thing. It was the cherry on top of the cake, basically. It was that cap to a remarkable season. Now, a season that started out as bad as any could, quite frankly, and ended on a note that was a storybook. And so it sort of brought everything together and it continued the momentum, but was it actually that one thing that was the straw that broke the camel's back on Isaiah Polamalu's commitment or Bubba Bolden's? No, I don't think it doesn't work that way. It can work against you, sort of, you know. I mean, certainly if they would have lost that game, a lot of people felt that they should have beat Penn State. They should have beat Penn State by a lot. And you lose that game, you sort of lose some momentum a little bit and people start to question you. I think they still would have had a good recruiting class. But, you know, was there a couple kids that all of a sudden they decide maybe they don't want to visit USC or they have second thoughts? Yeah, perhaps. But I don't think that there's any one game. It just doesn't work like that. You know, you're talking about the season. You're talking about kind of a whole of everything happening and kind of accumulating to create some momentum to really, you know, when you get on the road and you start doing in-home visits and you start doing these official visits, it's you hit the ground running. And that's really important in recruiting. And that's what they're able to do with that Rose Bowl win.
We have Arizona Italian. He sent me actually a message on USCfootball.com for questions once I posted we were doing another one of these podcasts. So his first one was, which of our verbals took visits in the last 2 weeks and to which schools? So he said, I'm asking about all verbals, but like Liechtenstein is one that was mentioned as potentially looking around. Oregon specifically was mentioned and was never updated or confirmed. But any verbals that took visits recently, Gerard?
Well, obviously Stephen Carr took a visit to UCLA. I don't believe Liechtenstein visited Oregon. I don't have any information to say that he did visit Oregon. Any other verbal commitments that made visits? I don't think so. Jalen McKenzie talked about possibly taking an official visit, but I don't believe he did this past weekend. Terrence Lang took an official visit to Colorado. So he took an official to Colorado. And I think that's it. I think, Giuliano Falonico did take a visit to Oregon. Yeah, cause he was, I'm thinking Falo. He's committed and he took a visit to Oregon. So you had Stephen Carr, UCLA, Giuliano Falonico, Oregon, Terrence Lane, Colorado, and, that's it. I think that's it.
Okay. And he also wants to know, have the coaches said anything, about taking a blue shirt/advanced scholarship player in addition to McKenzie?
Well, I don't know. The coaches are not allowed to talk about recruiting publicly, so.
So they have not.
I don't think they've. Yeah, no, they haven't. I don't. They have not announced anything about taking any additional blue shirts. From what I've heard from various sources, I mentioned this before. Michael Owusu is a potential advanced scholarship. There's potential that they take him. USC is pretty close to that 85, though. You know, that's the thing is, and we talked about this in the last recruiting podcast. You're really only taking blue shirts because you're falling short of that 85 and you want to get another scholarship player on the roster. And a lot of that has to do with scout team at that point. You know, you want to get some good Division I players on the roster. So your practices are going good. You've got some depth. You don't wear your starters out or even your second team guys out because everybody has to go against each other during the week. It's the attrition factor is why you want a full 85 there. And so USC is close to 85. Now, we've talked about potentially some of the walk-ons that got scholarships last year. Maybe, you know, they don't have to have those scholarships renewed. That could happen. I don't get the sense that Clay Helton wants to make a habit of that, but there's potential there. So that might open up a spot where if they fall short, you know, with the 23 that they have for the 2017 class, you have an additional maybe 2-3 spots open, then maybe you start to look at a blue shirt. But we talked already about this as well, and to repeat it, if you're taking those rides and you're trying to get that 85 after signing day, then you're also taking rides away from a potential transfer. And you don't know what could happen. I mean, if there's a Stevie Tuikolovatu on the market, a guy that's gonna leave, and you know, I know there's a couple guys. Brendan Fajoco, I think, is transferring from Texas Tech. He's a defensive tackle. You're gonna have some guys that might be leaving some schools, and if you at a point where you don't have, you know, another spot that you can fill on that 85, and you've kind of, you know, killed yourself there. And so you always sort of, I think, want to leave a little bit of room there, and so that's where you have to debate. If you're taking a blue shirt from a guy that is in this class that maybe is not a need, you know, and not a guy that you can get in the other. See, here's the thing. I mean, we talked about this, and I don't want to repeat everything I did in the last podcast, but Jalen McKenzie was unique because Jalen McKenzie is coming in at a need position, and he's coming in this class, and you compare him with what you would take in 2018, which, because he's an advanced scholarship, he's taking a ride from the 2018 class. When you compare and contrast with what's available in that class, Jalen McKenzie's a steal. He could end up being, he would be ranked higher, most likely, in the 2018 class than he is in this class, because this class is so deep. When you're talking about Michael Owusu, that's not necessarily true. Michael Owusu is ranked the same way, maybe a three-star, maybe even ranked lower, because the 2018 class as a whole has more talent. Now, that's a different situation, and again, you're creeping closer to that 85, and you probably want a little bit of room there before you get to that cap, just in case there's a possibility that you could get a transfer or somebody that could come in immediately and be able to play, or even from the standpoint of that they can't come in immediately, but it's still a really good player at a position that, hey, you know, we want to get that guy in here just to be able to have a red shirt. He has to sit out a year, but still makes our scout team that much better. So you always have to contrast and compare those things and weigh those things. I think that's really where USC is right now with another blue shirt.
All right, we got two more, Gerard. K. Stu, he said, one question that I have is for you and Gerard. How do you guys balance the insider knowledge with what you publish or announce? I realize that you all know more than you can talk about, but how do you balance what is in the best interest for the Peristyle audience versus the recruits and what isn't? And maybe some historical evidence or information that you sat on or wish you had, and vice versa, things that you sat on but didn't really need to. Thanks for your work, from K. Stu.
Geez, that's like, I mean,
it's how the sausage is made.
That's a podcast in itself. First of all, how do you weigh it? It all depends. You know, it's such a vague answer to give, but you're always, it's all different, you know, and for me, I've always taken the standpoint that the recruits, you got to kind of protect the recruits. Why? Because they're kids. And so there's a lot of stuff that you get that, I mean, there's a lot of conversations I have with recruits, and they'll tell me things And I think to myself, okay, this is not going in the story. A, because it just comes off wrong, or it's not articulated from a standpoint that I know the fans will read it and they will take it apart, because that's what everybody does. When they read these articles, they're not just reading the lines, they're reading between the lines, they're trying to decipher, and they're picking it apart with a microscope. And so you don't want to put a 17-year-old kid, let him say something that you know might get picked apart and used against him. So from that standpoint, I'm always sort of got the back of the kids and who I'm talking to and trying to protect them. And that goes also for my sources as well. You're trying to protect your sources, and you feel like if there's anything that can come back on them to negatively affect them, you don't want to do that. And it's really never been – it's been about the story. I always feel like it's always about reporting and giving as much as I can, but not trying to be the guy and make it about me. I think a lot of writers, especially when you're young, you want to make a name for yourself so much that it's about you, and it's about you breaking the story and how great you are because you broke the story, and not about the story itself. And the story doesn't happen without sources sometimes. The story doesn't happen without someone else. And so I always keep that in mind and try not to get ahead of the story itself. And so that, I guess, is what always goes through my mind when it comes to one of those things is, you know, am I putting something out there that is going to affect more than me? And is it going to adversely affect more than me? I can take it. I can handle it. If somebody has a question or something that I report, I'm always there to explain. I mean, that's the thing that message boards have brought to journalism. And a lot of journalists hate message boards because of it. But it makes you accountable, because if you report something, you're going to get questioned on it. And if people don't like it, they're going to call you out on it. And it's right there. And we've built a community and a lot of credibility over the years in this particular market and just, you know, nationally, quite frankly, because, I mean, I know a lot of these guys. I know all the national writers. I know guys like Bart Simmons at 24/7 and guys like John Tallman, who runs Rivals now. And I mean, I've worked with all these guys for over the years, and you build credibility with these people because they see how you do things. There's a professionalism that comes with doing these things. So that's what it's always about when it comes to, okay, weighing, okay, can this is really good information. I know the fans want to hear it, and they need it, and they'd be excited about it. But what am I affecting by giving this information out? What are the ripples that come from me giving this out? And so, you know, I mean, there's information we're sitting on right now that we could put out. I mean, we could just, you know, give it out and say, screw it. We're great. We got the information. It's ours to give out now. But that's not the way it works, because it's going to adversely affect somebody else. And as far as like stories, man, I don't know. I would have to, we got to get back to that, because there's probably a bunch of things. There's nothing that comes to mind right now, but you sit on a lot of stuff. And sometimes you're able to release it. I mean, all the McNair stuff that we know, like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that we've had to sit on and not talk about. Because why? Because, you know, there's a court case. And there's things that can be affected that, you know, people that are impacted that, you know, you don't want to adversely affect them just to get some scoop for something. You know, the scoop comes and goes. There's always going to be more scoop. But, you know, people are people, and you don't want to affect their lives adversely. Just to get some news out, just, you know, because you think it's going to advance your career. I couldn't live with that. I couldn't do that. So I try not to do that and live by that, basically, that creed.
We've definitely had recruits, like, you know, we have a story. Hey, I'm committing, but I want to hold off until whatever. And we hold off, and then someone else ends up reporting it. And it might, a lot of times it's people that don't do this normally. It could be like a newspaper who they're just like, oh, I know this. I'm running with it.
Yeah.
And you
kind
of spoil the kid's
day. It's usually when there's no ties to the school or the kid or whatever. I mean, you know, with recruits, you know, I get a lot of information on guys that are going to commit early. I mean, shoot, we did a whole video feature with Sua Cravens well before he committed. I mean, we had to obviously sit on that. But you know, I'm not going to burn a future Trojan when this is the school that I've covered and this has been my area of expertise for 13 years now. I mean, that's silly. That's dumb to do that. I've obviously built up a good reputation with the people at USC and people around USC in addition to the USC fans. So yeah, it's silly to do that kind of stuff. And But you, like you said, you're right on the button there. A lot of people just come and go out of the recruiting process, and they just float in here, and they're just like, oh, yeah, this is happening, and they just release a story when it's like, wow, the kid's going to announce next week, man. I mean, you know, didn't have to steal his thunder like that. But it's not just recruiting. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's team-wise that, you know, through the recruiting process, I come across stuff, too. And I'm not the team beat writer. You know, that's Dan's job. But so there's a lot of stuff that, yeah, we end up sitting on from that standpoint, too.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things where if you did burn somebody, you know, their high school coach will remember that. And there, a lot of them talk, and you might not get that information the next time. So we kind of have to be careful with it. Just because we've been doing this for, you know, the site's been going for 20 years now. You don't want to be burning sources and stuff like that. So that's a good question, though. One last one is from Dan. He's a USC class of 1962 grad. He says, thanks as always for the great insights into USC sports, especially football. Years ago, USC was able to carry over 100 scholarship players on the football roster. Then the NCAA put a limit at 85 to placate smaller programs. Do you see any chance that the limit will be raised to at least 95 so that more high school students can get scholarships and possibly have fewer injuries and added depth and better rotation of players? During the transition from one platoon football to two platoon, when John McKay was head coach, there was a rule that you could only substitute an individual player once a quarter. Wow, I didn't even know that. What are your thoughts regarding an expanded roster? Fight on, Dan.
Very, very doubtful. Yes. I think that the NCAA likes the parity. I think that their initial reason for cutting the scholarships to help smaller schools and to sort of, you know, water down a little bit what was available for schools in terms of being able to monopolize, you know, areas and just sign kids just to keep them away from other schools. And that's what went on back then. I think those days are done. Now, there is an argument to be made, okay, if we actually see the fat trim from Division One, and we see these bigger schools go into a smaller pool, a smaller, like, division of sorts, and this obviously is connected with pay-for-play, and we don't want to get into that whole conversation, but, you know, let's say something like that happens, because obviously the smaller schools can't survive against the bigger schools in that circumstance and in that situation. Could they all of a sudden decide to up it a little bit? I still think they don't. I just don't think they see any reason why they would allow the bigger schools to be able to just pay for more kids and do that. I think there's already so many questions about the pay for play and if schools actually start having to pay kids or even if they have to increase stipends to a certain extent. There's a lot of smaller schools that are not even able to do that. So yeah, extending the rosters even more and giving more scholarships, it obviously separates the haves and the have-nots even more. And the NCAA, I mean, they're keep adding on bowl games for crying out loud. I mean, they seem to just want to increase the amount of schools and exposure for you know, the Tulsas of the world and the, you know, Louisiana Techs of the world and everything and make more of it. You know, I think from the NCAA standpoint and from the college's standpoint, you know, there's just – more money to be had, the more schools you have out there. And even though some of them seem completely unsuccessful at it, it's still, you know, they end up in conferences and then they make TV deals. And so everybody's getting something from it. So, yeah, lessening that and like I said, you know, sort of making a bigger separation between the haves and have-nots through scholarships, I don't see happening at all. I think if it's going to happen, it's probably going to happen because schools are going to have to start paying kids to some extent. And obviously, there may be even less scholarship offers at that point. They may even bring it down to 75 for all we know because they actually have to pay kids instead of just giving them free education and board.
Great stuff. Gerard Martinez, our national recruiting analyst. This one was an hour and 20 minutes, so we're a little bit shorter pre-signing day podcast, but we want to get it up there for you guys so you can listen to it. And, you know, just really embrace yourself and engross. Why am I blanking on the word? You want to
envelop?
No. That's really bugging me now. I almost said a really bad word there. but you're just going to immerse yourself.
You're going to immerse yourself
in all of this recruiting knowledge that Gerard was laying down on the Peristyle podcast, Trojan Blast recruiting podcast from USCFootball.com. My mind was not working there, Gerard. My apologies. But yeah, good stuff, man.
immersive experience. There you go.
Yeah, it was good. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Thank you, Gerard. And I know we'll let you get back to work because there's lots to do. And hopefully we'll see everyone out there at the lab tomorrow. We'll know a lot about the class and just a few more pieces after that. But thanks again for tuning in. Thanks to Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. And I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.